one. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? For the union makes us strong. They never toil to earn. Yet without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel could turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong.
In our hands is placed a power greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of armies magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old. For the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong.
All right, we were just listening to union music brought to us by some special guests I've got here in the studio. This is Bobby McGee with Solidarity Forever. I want to welcome John Hennessy first up. He's here with a host of people from the IWW, the International Workers of the World.
Industrial
Workers of the World. John, thanks for coming up here. Tell me about the music that you chose. Before we get into the IWW and your activities here in Lincoln and in Nebraska, tell me about the music you brought up.
Sure. First, thanks for having us on. That was Solidarity Forever by Bobby McGee. The reason that I wanted to start with that song, like so many early IWW songs, they followed the tune of Christian hymns that were popular at the time. And a lot of people, when listening to early labor music, will notice that. And it's funny, the reason they did that is they companies that would be have a picket line out front, or strikers, or any kind of protest out front, they would bring in the Salvation Army band to come drown them out. And, I mean, the Salvation Army, we think of all these, you know, charitable things they do. Well, they'd bring in the band to drown them out and to take away any effect that the any effect of soapboxing or speaking to the public whatsoever. So Joe Hill and others decided that the most effective way to combat that would be to use that band as their backing band. So they would come out and they would play these Christian hymnals. And so they wrote their music to all those Christian hymnals so that no matter what the Salvation Army band was playing, they had a labor song for it.
Very nice. Not to mention that you would also have, I mean, hymns would be the common denominator that everyone would already have as a result of their experience. So they'd already feel like, oh, I can sing along with this once I learn the words.
Know the tune. And not only that, but it's a little more apt to stick into people's minds after that, too.
And so we're talking about quite a long time ago. When you're talking about the average American would have known lots of hymns, let's face it.
Sure.
Even if a lot of Americans identify as religious people,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking we don't all sing the same hymns.
I'm thinking you're right, yeah.
So what time period are we talking about?
Well, you know, the union was started in 1905, the IWW, excuse me, and, you know, it was very active in the early 1900s. There was a stronger feeling of, I guess you would say, militancy among workers. They demanded more, and they were feeling very, very mistreated, and rightly so. And so they were very active amongst that time, and you know, these are the times that that the music really became, you know, labor music was always, it's not like the labor music started with the IWW, but the music that I've brought today, that's when it really started out, you know, around World War I. era, very much so.
Excellent. So we're going to be listening to interspersed music here today, but in addition, you've brought along with you some of the colleagues in the fight.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so we have with us this morning three and maybe yet a fourth member, not that John isn't. John, I'm just going to designate you music guy.
All right, music guy. Thank you.
We've got Tyler, Brian, and Andrew also in the studio who are here to talk about the fact that IWW may feel like a... And I don't mean this with any insult. I'm just saying from the average Joe's perspective on the street, the IWW may feel as if it's a remnant from history, but you guys are alive and well here in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yeah, for a lot of people, the union started, in 1905, so for a lot of people, they feel like this is something from the past, but in recent years, there's been quite a resurgence in union, or IWW activity. And, this was a union, at about its peak, it had 100,000 active and members in good standing. Today, that number is more around 3,000, but we're involved with a lot of campaigns, organizing some of the worst jobs, and Tyler will be able to speak more about that, but we've been organizing workers in Starbucks, some of these really low-wage jobs where the workers are just, there's a lot for them to win when they organize. And Jimmy John's, and we also have a recent campaign here in Lincoln where we're working with Open Harvest to try to get a living wage for employees there.
So in the other organizing that I'm used to, unions are often grouped and clustered by the type of work, right? Mm-hmm. Like people who are welders or people who are janitors. Does the IWW have a specific category that we cover these people, but if you're a different type of worker, we can't really help you?
Yeah, that's what separates the IWW from other unions. Like the AFL, the American Federation of Labor, they commonly organize their workers based on trades or crafts, and the IWW organizers saw that often pitted worker against worker. So where they differed was they would organize, the intent was to organize all working class people as a class, and we were separated into, or organized into, industries. So, for example, like university workers would all be in the same industry, and that's where the industrial comes from. And not, when I first heard of the industrial workers of the world, I thought they meant industrial workers. But
yeah, I mean, my immediate assumption is someone standing near very heavy machinery,
yeah, exactly.
Like working in a factory. But so it is open to all trades, all mm-hmm. employment. Do you find that there tends to be a concentration more that you get people from one category than another?
We tend to today see a lot of our workers come from, I guess, lower wage jobs like retail, and there's active IWW unions in trucking and other sort of manual labor type jobs, like construction jobs and things like that. But I think the most prominent campaigns are the ones involving the lower paid workers, the service industry.
Right. It's starting how it used to, how it was in the beginning. It's a bottom up organization, and it's worker controlled, and that's, I think, the reason that you're seeing a lot of people from the service industries and the retail industries is because those are very widely the most mistreated workers in our society today. Yeah, extremely overlooked, and so I think that's the reason that we're seeing that. It's harder to get. It seems more difficult to get more white collar business class folks willing to organize at this time, but there's a lot of change going on right now, and I really think that the atmosphere for that is coming around.
Excellent. I'm talking to members and supporters of the IWW. I'm really sort of excited about the fact that grassroots movements that have a historical link seem sometimes to have faded away, that people who have said this is a structured way to speak back to the establishment, that you sort of end up with this idea that that's old-fashioned.
Right.
I think it's old-fashioned in the best sense, that I think you're dealing with classic Americana and reaching back to the roots of First Amendment, right to assemble, right to protest. So I think what you're doing is very cool.
Well, thank you.
We'll get into a little bit more detail about the activities and events and ways in which you can learn more about the IWW in the next half hour, but we're going to listen to a little bit more union music. Something, you know, when you guys said that you wanted to be here on the show, I thought, oh, I have a couple of songs, but John, you've got us covered.
I've got us covered.
Excellent. What have we got coming up next?
We've got Billy Bragg playing a classic. This is a more modern take on a classic. This is There's Power in a Union.
Last year, Nebraskans missed out on millions of dollars in federal tax credits because they didn't ask for them. These included earned income, child independent care credits.
If you had a paying job last year, if you have kids under 17, you might qualify. Call 1-877-659-7870. That's 1-877-659-7870 for more information.
You've earned it, so claim it. Sponsored by the Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services and aired in cooperation with the Nebraska Broadcasters Association and this station.
I long hear preachers come out every night, try to tell you what's wrong and what's right. But when asked about something to eat, they will answer in voices as sweet. Hey, by the state of Utah, November 19th, 1915, for writing songs like this. But he left them to us. These are our people's songs. You damn well ought to learn how to sing it, don't you think? It's done Baptist style. There must be some Baptists around here somewhere. You understand what I mean. Are there any Baptists here? Good. Let's answer back. I sing out a line, and then you sing it back, and then we sing a line together. All right? And you follow these guys.
You will eat,
you will eat,
by and by,
by and by,
in that glorious land in the sky,
way up high,
work and pray,
work and pray,
and live on hay,
live on hay.
And you'll get high in the sky when you die.
Real vociferous on that last part, all right?
And the Starvation Army, they play. And they shout, and they clap, and they praise. Now, when they've got all your coins on the drum, and they will tell you when you're on the bum.
When this world and its wealth we have gained, to the grafters we'll sing this refrain.
Hey, you will eat,
you will eat,
by and by,
by and by,
when you've learned how to cook and how to fry.
Chop
some wood,
chop some wood,
do you good,
do you good,
and you'll eat in that sweet by and by.
Yeah, that was Pie in the Sky, another classic. That was Utah Phillips, along with Ani DeFranco and others. One of the great things about that song, it's another example of how we, you know, Joe Hill and others have taken the hymnals and taken the bass for that and wrote a song over it. But I love the last verse in that song. It basically talks about the values of the IWW. And showing us that anything, you know, anything workers want, we're going to have to go out and get. We're not going to be able to hope for or to count on anybody else. It's going to have to be a ground-up movement and a bottom-up movement. It's gonna take a lot of hard work, but it's up to us to do it. So I thought that was a great example of that.
Well, and Utah Phillips has been a friend to the labor movement. I mean, he didn't just capture and resuscitate the music of an era. He also has captured the politics. So I think you can't go wrong with too much Utah. So for those of you that are just joining me, I have members of the IWW here in the studio visiting with us about efforts to organize labor and to ensure fair working wage and good conditions for all workers. And it seems like it's a blast from the past, but they're doing it in the modern world. And so I want to talk to Tyler next and turn to Tyler, because I understand that you've been actually in perhaps the most modern conception of business, Starbucks, you have been engaged in trying to do some collective union organizing yourself. Tell us a little bit about what you've had going on.
That's correct. I've been working at Starbucks since 2008, and I began actively trying to organize Starbucks in the Omaha metro area in about 2008. Before I joined up with the IWW, or even really knew what the IWW was, I tried reaching out through the AFL-CIO and other unions, such as like the SEIU and Unite Here, to try to organize this industry, and they really weren't interested. And I think that's one of the great things about the IWW is that we're willing to get involved maybe where other larger unions aren't, because of their fear of like turnover and whatnot in the industry. And we've been quite successful at that. The Starbucks Workers Union campaign actually began in 2004 in New York, in Manhattan, where the first stores went public there in May of 2004. And since then, it's been pretty rapidly growing to a nationwide organization. Right now, we have approximately 300 members across the United States, with stores public in several areas across the United States. Most recently, we just had a store in New York City, the Astor Place store, which is the third largest Starbucks on the Eastern Coast, go public on Martin Luther King Day, which was a great day to go public, because also on that day we were celebrating a major union victory in which we'd convinced Starbucks to pay time and a half pay for all workers nationwide in North America in honor of Martin Luther King Day. And that was the culmination of a three-year campaign that we've been organizing at Starbucks, actively calling for them to honor Martin Luther King by paying time and a half on that day and embrace their cultural ideal of embracing diversity in the workplace by acknowledging Dr. King.
And so let me just try being devil's advocate, which is hard because I wear my biases pretty openly on my sleeve, but let me try to be devil's advocate. Starbucks, unlike, say, a guy who's working in a factory where his arm might get pulled into the machinery, you're standing in a well air-conditioned or warm environment, nobody's poking you with a stick. Why is it still important for workers in a setting, whether we're talking the food setting, whether we're talking retail, why is it still important that people need to take that extra step and think about the conditions for the employee who's standing there behind the counter?
Well, safety is a big cause to rally around in the labor movement, but we go beyond the scope of just safety concerns in the workplace, which I should also point out there are several working at Starbucks. But, you know, it's also about respect and dignity for workers, and you'd be surprised how poked and prodded we can be at Starbucks. In the last 3 years, there's really been a cultural shift that was recently outlined in an article in the New York Times that came out in September, I believe, discussing the cultural values that have changed at Starbucks, where they've really moved from being that third-place environment and promoting, like, an open setting for conversation to really connect with your customers to sell, 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 you know, with the economy collapsing the way it did. In addition to that, Starbucks actually only gives health insurance to about 42% of its workers, and when they figure in the numbers for this 42%, they're including all the managers and non-exempt employees too, which is worse than Walmart. And when Walmart figures its percentages for workers that they give health insurance to, they do not include non-exempt employees in their numbers. You know, so they're trying to boost the numbers and make themselves appear better than they actually are. And we get a lot of grief working with the Starbucks Workers Union because people are under this misconception that Starbucks is this like great progressive company to work for, which isn't necessarily the case. It's just a massive campaign by Starbucks' PR department to push this agenda and this idea, because by buying Starbucks coffee, you think you're doing something good, when in reality, workers at most Starbucks make $7.35 an hour, which is a dime more than minimum wage. We have no guaranteed hours. Our hours flex very dramatically. 1 week I could work 15 hours, the next week I could work 39 hours, you know, and then be back down to 10 hours again. You know, and Starbucks makes a big deal out of things like giving health insurance to part-time employees, but at the time when Starbucks was promoting this ideal, every employee at Starbucks was a part-time employee. So are you going to give health insurance to no employees, or are you going to, you know, tout the idea that you give health insurance to part-time employees because all of your employees are part-time employees? So it's just kind of a spin game.
Yeah, and I think that, to be clear, the problem doesn't just reside with Starbucks or Walmart. It's employers as a whole have taken this new class of people who don't necessarily look like, in the past, the worker, right? You're not grimy, you're not sweaty, you may in fact have more education than the average member of the IWW back in its founding, but the problems of are you taking enough money home to live on, to support your family, to participate in your community, that's the fundamental similarity between IWW then and now.
Exactly. And I mean, we've really been reaching out to retail and service workers as of late, you know, with our large campaigns going on with the Jimmy John's Workers Union and the Starbucks Workers Union. In addition to that, we organize a lot of food co-ops and things like that, which I'm sure Andrew will discuss a little bit more later. You know, but we really try to open ourselves up to all workers and organize from the ground up. You know, like when we talk about organizing Starbucks, well, we're not only going to organize baristas, we're going to organize bussers. You know, the people that stand in the cafe and do nothing but sweep the floors, they're just as important to us as the people that are behind the counter making the drinks. You know, the only people that really aren't open to our union are our management, you know, positions, but that's kind of a federal mandate.
And it's kind of a no-brainer in terms of conflicting interests.
Exactly.
So I want to talk, I just want to touch on the fact that if people are listening and they're interested, that there are monthly meetings that are happening. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little bit about if someone's listening and they want to get involved, where's the next meeting? How do they make contact if they themselves want to come and participate and sit in on what you're doing?
Of course. We hold our monthly GMB meetings, which is our general membership branch meetings, once a month. They're the last Sunday of every month at 1 p.m. Currently, we alternate locations between Omaha and Lincoln. The next meeting will be happening on January 30th at 1 p.m. at the main branch of the Omaha Public Library. And then the next meeting, which will occur in Lincoln, will be February 27th at the Monk House. And you can get in contact with us if you are interested in attending those meetings or just want more information by emailing us at our Gmail account. Do you guys have the Gmail address handy?
I have the branch email. It's nebraskagmb@iww.org.
So Nebraska GMB, and again, that's
General Membership Branch.
Okay, because G's, M's, and B's all sound like it, on the radio or you're talking on the phone, it's all mushed together. So now I want to turn to, if I could, and we've had then the actual worker experience, and I want to talk a little bit about taking it up a notch to the big picture, because we have a professor of economics, Hank Vanderberg, who's here to talk to us about, he's a member of IWW, but he's also a scholar. And so you've got that big picture viewpoint about where all this is situated. Thank you for joining us here this morning.
Good to be here this morning. The IWW suddenly was of great interest to me in the sense that even at an academic institution such as UNL, where I'm a professor, I think most people think we're kind of isolated from these issues. We're very well treated, and we are experiencing some of the same fundamental changes that we're seeing everywhere in the labor market, and that really opened my eyes to the need for an organization like the IWW. And what's happening at the university, of course, is we are becoming a very segmented place of employment, much as we see everywhere. Managers do very well. Workers see their wages constantly suppressed. Now, we have a worse situation at UNL. We keep charging higher and higher tuition from students. Some professors, and especially administrators, are increasingly paid higher and higher salaries, whereas we also have fewer and fewer professors, full professors, associate professors, and more people hired on a temporary basis, instructors, adjunct professors, professors of practice, and graduate students, and anywhere else we can throw in front of the class at incredibly low wages. So we're seeing this incredible spread of incomes within the university. We are about as unegalitarian as any organization can possibly become.
The ivory tower has cracks?
Oh, the ivory tower has many cracks, and things are not headed in a very positive direction in that sense. So that's what kind of tickled my interest in the IWW. Also, just, you know, from an economic perspective, I think it's very important to mention, just to put all of this discussion in the proper perspective. We, as a country, are going through this process of growing inequality. We are in the amazing situation to where minimum wage back in 1968 was higher than it is today in real purchasing power terms. When I had my first on-campus job back in the late 60s, I earned the equivalent of what today would be about $10.50 an hour. Minimum wage today is $7.25. If you look at wages overall, the average wage has not increased since that time. I mean, it's amazingly similar, yet we've had economic growth, and almost all of that growth has been captured by the top 10% of earners in our society. So we are going through this incredible wave of inequality. Measures of inequality are now, today, exceeding those of the 1920s, which was the previous high point. 1926 was the previous worst year for equality. We have now exceeded that. It's astounding that this is going on, and the more you look at it, it is largely the result of one large factor, and that is workers are not organized. The unions have been broken, and efforts to break those unions continues, as we see it now in the public sector. We'll see President Obama talking about competitiveness tonight. That's one of the themes. Translate that into, we don't want spunky, expensive workers. And so this whole mentality of breaking the unions in the interest of efficiency, it really is in the interest of concentrating incomes. And that's certainly been the result. And so that, in a nutshell, is my interest. I'm very much interested in potentially organizing professors and instructors and other low-wage earners on campus in some kind of a labor movement. This is totally against the tide, but it has to be done.
Well, and you're not just against the tide, Professor Vandenberg. You also potentially could be against the law. I want to point out for those of you, I started at the top of the hour, the top of the show, mentioning that the legislature's in session, so we're all in peril. And you should be watching legislation. You can do that by visiting www.nebraskalegislature.gov. But there are two different bills, both which were introduced by Omaha Senator John Nelson, that would outlaw collective bargaining for state employees. LB 664 would repeal the Industrial Laborers Act and the State Employees Collective Bargaining Act. He's also introduced a constitutional amendment, LR 29, constitutional amendment to prohibit the government from engaging in collective bargaining. Now, I don't want to pretend that I have any expertise when I'm talking to people here who are experts, but fundamentally, you have a First Amendment right to collectively express yourselves. It's not just me as an individual worker. I have the right to band together with other people and to form associations. Do you think that these two legislative efforts coming here out of Nebraska are representing a larger national effort, or is this a random screwball introduction of a bill that won't be going anywhere?
It is a very much a concerted, perhaps screwball effort, but it is concerted, it is intentional. And this law, again, the legality of it, I don't know. I guess, workers have the right to join. I guess the government has the right to not deal with them, although, on the other hand, government is us, and we need to insist that they do this. There's a second effort here that's closely related that also is going kind of nationwide, and that is to give states and local governments the ability to declare bankruptcy. I don't know if you've seen that. Traditionally, law does not allow government to declare bankruptcy. They must meet their obligations. That's the law. This would allow them to essentially weasel out from under those obligations, and those precisely are obligations such as labor contracts and obligations to pay pensions. This is a way of letting government get out from under their pension burden that they feel is difficult, and it is. There are some, underfunded pension mandates out there, but this law would essentially allow government to simply say, well, worker, you've been working for us for 40 years and you thought you were getting a pension. By the way, we just declared bankruptcy and that pension won't be forthcoming. Relationships between government and their workers is under threat, and it's just following on what's happened in the private sector. The private sector has largely succeeded in doing this. Now it's being extended to the government sector, and yes, it's intentional, obviously.
We're all in peril. I'm going to do another, we're going to dip into a little bit more music, and then we'll come back. We've just got a few more minutes here with the IWW. Thank you for joining me on the Melting Pot. We've got up next Pete Seeger, with The Farmer is the Man.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, oh, the farmer is the man who feeds them all. If you'll only look and see, I think you will agree that the farmer is the man who feeds them all. Oh, the farmer is the man, the farmer is the man, lives on credit till the fall. Then they take him by the hand and they lead him from the land, and the middleman's the one who gets it all. When the lawyer hangs around and the butcher cuts a pound, oh, the farmer is the man who feeds them all. And the preacher and the cook go a-strolling by the brook, but the farmer is the man who feeds them all. Oh, the farmer is the man, the farmer is the man, lives on credit till the fall. With the interest rate so high, it's a wonder he don't die, for the mortgage man's the one that gets it all. When the banker says he's broke and the merchant's up in smoke, they forget that it's the farmer feeds them all. It would put them to the test if the farmer took a rest, then they'd know that it's the farmer feeds them all. Oh, the farmer is the man, the farmer is the man, lives on credit till the fall. And his pants are wearing thin, his condition it's a sin, he's forgot that he's the man who feeds them all.
Tired of that repetitive hit after hit programming you get steamrollered with at corporate-owned spots on the dial? Then join me, Jim Peterson, Tuesday mornings at 10 till noon for Rock, Blues, and Rockin' Blues on The X. From coast to coast and line to line, Zoom's Outlaw X will be cutting through the air and around the third rock via the web. From classic cuts to hot new jams, you'll be able to say,
all right, that's true. You need to stay tuned for The X coming up next. But before Jim gets here, just a little more rabble-rousing. Thanks for those who called who are interested in knowing more about the legislative measures that are threatening the rights of workers and collective bargaining. I'll just repeat those in case you also missed it. LB 664 and LR 29 are the two bills that are introduced by Senator John Nelson out of Omaha that would repeal the Industrial Relations Act and the State Employees Collective Bargaining Act. Next up, I want to talk to Andrew a little bit about his experiences with organizing here in Lincoln. Thanks for being here this morning, Andrew.
It's good to be here. Basically, the IWW has been working to organize cooperatives across the United States. Most pertinent here, local, we have cooperatives and that kind of run on the same business model as standard retail organizations, paying workers minimum wage, not having workers on the board, having the same sort of top-down model. And to go along the lines of what Hank was saying, the issue is when you're paying a worker minimum wage, they can hardly afford to even shop at their own cooperative. They can't put money back into the market, so you have this cycle where workers are being underpaid and they can't fund local markets. They can't be a part of it. So we're trying to struggle to get that worker involvement, to have living wages for workers so that workers can be a part of the organizations. It's supposed to be a cooperative, so there can be cooperative measures going on there.
And so do you find that messaging in the modern world of organizing, I know that you guys have been using Facebook, for example, as one way to get your message out, but you're also doing good old-fashioned face-to-face meetings. Do you find that organizing on this issue, that you get more people involved than you normally would have because you now have these information technologies available to you?
Yes and no. I find that Facebook, kind of like your regular news, it works, it's kind of sound bites. People catch things, they see what's going on, which is very helpful, but you don't get an in-depth analysis. You miss a lot of language that you would have talking to a person face-to-face, having that exchange. To that end, it's been very helpful for us to attend the Open Harvest board meetings to talk to people and to say, hey, we want to change things, and we want to see workers taking a democratic role here. We want to dedicate this to improving conditions for workers, and we've seen a lot of positive responses there, and we're going to continue to try to work with the board to improve things at Open Harvest and get the workers, get everyone that wants to see sustainable issues going on there, see workers' rights recognized, improved. So it's just an issue of directly addressing those problems that persist there.
And so if I understand correctly, you guys have got, in addition to your regular monthly meetings, you also have a training coming up. Tyler, tell us about that, what you've got coming up.
That's correct. The weekend of February 12th and 13th, we're going to be offering free training seminars for anyone, any workers or any students that are interested in potentially organizing. They can come down and see what it's all about and kind of get the tools they need to approach other workers to discuss the opportunities that they see in their workplaces and the environments that they're in. We're putting this training on collectively with workers from the Twin Cities Minneapolis IWW branch. And then, like I said, that'll be happening February 12th and the 13th. The training seminars will probably be about 6 hours long each day. If you're interested in that, you can certainly contact us again by our email.
The email again is Nebraska GMB, General Membership Branch, at IWW.org.
Or you can, of course, look us up on Facebook by just searching Nebraska IWW or the Nebraska Starbucks Workers Union.
And we have a phone number, 402-370-6962.
Excellent. I want to thank all of you, John, Tyler, Brian, Andrew, and Hank, all for coming up today and talking about efforts to improve working conditions for all people in Nebraska. And I gather that we're going out with one more Pete Seeger.
That's right. This is Pete Seeger. Which side are you on?
Union. on your FM dial? AZUMHD, Nebraska's one and only certified blues station.
Support for programming on KZUM comes from longtime partner, The Mill, offering coffee, teas, candies, and accessories. The Mill is located at 800 P Street in the historic Haymarket and at 4736 Prescott in College View. Online at millcoffee.com, visitors can purchase products and gift cards and learn about in-house specials. That's The Mill Gourmet Coffee in the historic Haymarket, College View, and at millcoffee.com.